Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Badlands Podcast, the only podcast out there that is 100% chiseled and is proudly part of the Chairshot Radio Network. I am Mags, and I've only got one of our triumvirate of hosts today. It's the returning Mr. Paul Tolley. Paul, how are you, sir?
I'm really good, thank you. How about you?
Yeah, not too bad. Been a busy week, but yeah, just glad to have some time to shoot the shit with you and discuss another of one of wrestling's what ifs.
Yeah, this be a good one. This, like, I didn't realize how much of an impact it could have potentially had. So researching this one, I've loved doing this. It's a shame Rain's not with us today, but. Yeah, I think it's like the old days. This, but we never really did many double handers, did we? We always had someone with us.
We normally had at least one guest on the show, so yeah it's all new, I suppose. Yeah, and Ray is out on assignment. Hopefully, he'll be back next week. Much love to Ray, and definitely go and give him a follow at It's Ray Cash. Show him a little bit of love. But yeah, this was my topic this week, and I went with the what if the curtain call never happened. So for you younger wrestling cubs out there who may have heard of the curtain call but not quite understand what it was, so back in the middle of 1996, Kevin Nash, who was Diesel at the time, and Scott Hall, who was Razor Ramon, had both kind of give notice to the WWF. They were jumping ship to WCW. The last show that they were at for the company was a house show at Madison Square Gardens, May the 19th of 1996. Kevin Nash as Diesel, he wrestled Shawn Michaels in the main event. And earlier in the night, Scott Hall as Razor Ramon, he had wrestled Hunter S. Helmsley. What you may not know is that these four people were part of a group backstage, a very kind of political group in terms of stroke and sway with the company and with the other wrestlers, called the Click. And after the Diesel and Shawn Michaels match, the Razor and Triple H came out to the ring, and they all had a hug and kind of raised each other's hands, essentially because this could be potentially the last time they saw each other for quite a while. Now, we as wrestling fans nowadays, with the kind of like the death of kayfabe, I suppose, we would see this as like a heartwarming moment, a kind of a goodbye. But back then, kayfabe was still a pretty real thing, and this was it was not seen as something that should happen. Heels and faces shouldn't be interacting in this way in the ring, and it would have all kind of gone under the rug, I suppose, if it wasn't for the fact it was filmed on somebody's camera, which then leaked out into the kind of burgeoning internet, and became huge news, absolutely massive news. And it kind of almost forced Vince's hand into kind of punishing the wrestlers for breaking kayfabe, for breaking like the hidden wall of wrestling. So with the situation of Hall and Nash leaving, he couldn't really do anything to punish them too. It was their last night on for the company, and they were off. Shawn Michaels was in the position as WWF champion, so it was hard really to punish him for this. And essentially, the blame, rightly or wrongly, fell on Triple H. He bore the brunt of the blame, and wrestling's kind of like built on this this system of you pay your dues and you take your punishment and keep quiet about it and work hard and you get further in the company, in the business, I suppose. So yeah, that's essentially the point we were at. So the what if that I suggested was, what if this incident didn't happen? Now we can go a lot of kind of different ways with this. The way I've took it is that Scott Hall and Kevin Nash are still moving on, which is still the split from going to WCW, but there's no kind of punishment for Michaels or for Helmsley. If Paul may have gone a different way, but what do you think of that scenario, Paul?
Yeah, I've gone with exactly that. So I've got Hall and Nash leave because it had no impact on them leaving. I wonder if Vince did actually fire them on the night. Just to make yourself feel better.
You're fired. Well, I'm going anyway. No, but I fired you first.
And so Shawn Michaels, as you rightfully said, didn't really get any punishment. So Shawn Michaels, I've assumed Shawn Michaels' career trajectory pretty much stays the same. I think my most important aspect here is what happens to Triple H, really, because he doesn't get punished. And I believe his punishment was he had to marry Stephanie, wasn't it?
Oh, Jesus. his punishment was in 25 years, he would run the third brand and get roundly chastised for it and then took off him. I think that was the punishment. Vince believes in long-term punishing.
Long-term booking. Yeah, so I've sent it a lot. Well, we'll find out as we talk about it. I've sent it a lot on Triple H, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yep. With there only being two of us, I don't think there's kind of much point in one of us rhyming off all their spiel. I think we'll just throw it back and forth and kind of like mix it up.
Yeah, have fun with it.
So yeah, for those of you not in the know, this incident, whilst it seems kind of petty that someone would be getting punished for it, it does have a massive knock-on effect to what happened throughout wrestling. And
huge, yeah.
This incident leads to arguably the kind of build for the biggest star that wrestling would have for decades. Triple H was booked to win the King of the Ring later that year. One of the punishments he got was that he wouldn't win that King of the Ring. So that meant that WWF would be kind of scrambling for another winner. And that winner ended up being one Stone Cold Steve Austin. And at that King of the Ring, after he won, he cut a very infamous promo where he essentially chastised Jake Roberts, saying, "You can thump your Bible and say your prayers, read your John 3:16, but Austin 3:16 says, I just kick your ass." And if you believe the WWE kind of a narrative about it, the day after he was a huge star, went on to be multiple times world champion, the face of the Attitude Era, kind of the anti-hero, the guy that everybody wanted to be, beat up his boss, flipped the bird to everyone. It doesn't exactly ring true, and if you've been listening along with a change in attitude, you'll kind of understand that that kind of transformation from Stone Cold into Austin 3:16 actually takes a hell of a long time. I mean, we're still not there now, and we started exactly at the King of the Ring, and we're nearly 6 months down the line, and we're still not at that point where he's the huge star yet. So the WWF narrative is pretty much typical that they kind of rewrite history to fit the story. But yeah, essentially Triple H would have been that person. So we wouldn't have got that promo on that night. We wouldn't have had Austin starting that trajectory by winning that King of the Ring. So that kind of leads the WWF totally down a different kind of timeline for me.
Absolutely. You have to wonder what does become of Austin if Triple H doesn't receive this punishment. Mm-hmm. Because as you said, the WWE narrative about Stone Cold Steve Austin and his rise to, well, being the biggest star on the show, you know, from 97 onwards, that's not true. The Austin 316 promo itself was written on the night, I believe, by Michael Hayes.
Well, I believe Michael Hayes took a little bit of inspiration, but a lot of it was Austin just going off the cuff and making a lot of it up. So
yeah. But the idea for that promo happened on the night. Mm-hmm. Who knows when the idea for Austin winning? Maybe that was on the night. Maybe it was a few nights before. It wasn't a long term planned thing. And for, as you say, for you watch 6 months on with a change in attitude. Even after King of the Ring, the story is and it's the story from Steve Austin himself is Vince didn't buy it. Vince didn't believe in the Stone Cold character, and he didn't want him to. I think the story is that he didn't want him to do these promos that were making people laugh and that people were liking, because Steve Austin was still a heel. He was a heel when he cut that promo. He's a heel when he won King of the Ring. So, there's an argument that things would always come back round eventually because Steve Austin was who he was. I don't think that's the case. I think this really, he needed to win that King of the Ring and he needed to cut that promo. Because if you're perhaps younger and you're looking back, I don't think you truly understand like the cultural phenomenon Austin 316 was when you had sports like even soccer over here, but sports in America, in you had the 316 signs everywhere. Mm-hmm. Like literally everywhere. It went on to be the biggest selling t-shirt for a long, long time for the WWF.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. It became bigger than wrestling.
Yeah, I mean it was up there. Up there with Hulkamania, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. Essentially, it was one of those. I don't think we really see it anymore. Perhaps the last one was the Yes Movement, that kind of caught on beyond wrestling itself, but that doesn't happen very often.
No, you're absolutely right, and if we didn't get that promo, I have no doubts that Austin would have still made it as a big star. But I think there was kind of almost like a catching lightning in a bottle with him winning that tournament, then cutting that promo. And yeah, it was a slow build, but he rolled with it. If he didn't win that tournament and he didn't cut that promo, he wouldn't have that character to run with. So it would just be the Stone Cold that came just before that. He would just transition out of being the ringmaster. Somebody who was in essence bland. It was just a typical bad guy heel, wore black boots, black tights. There was nothing really kind of iconic about him until they put a mark in his hand and let him run his mouth. And that's what kind of like sold him to the crowd. So I think without that opportunity, he struggles to reach the level of star that he become.
Yeah, I completely agree. Which is that leads you down all sorts of avenues. If Stone Cold Steve Austin doesn't become the Stone Cold Steve Austin we know, I mean he was leading the charge for WWF. Like I said, 97 through 99.
Yeah, so if we follow that kind of that pathway down, I mean, it's interesting that we're talking about the curtain call and the click, and we've not even reached the click yet. But if you follow that pathway down, if we've no Austin 316, what that was the catalyst for the fight back against WCW. Without that, like I said, without him leading the charge, without him being the face of the company, without him being the person that brings that disillusioned audience back from the kind of the rock and wrestling new generation, 1 foot in the 80s, 1 foot in the 90s style era that WWF were going through. Vince has already said he was on the bones of his ass. He was struggling financially. We get the whole issue a few months later about him not being able to afford Brett's contract because the company are financially struggling. We spoke about how they wanted to essentially put his pay at the back end of his 20-year contract because they couldn't afford it, and they were hoping that there'd be an upturn in revenue. Without Austin leading that charge, where does that upturn in revenue come from? It just doesn't. We don't get the Mr. McMahon character, which is another kind of big factor in WWF essentially slaying the WCW. I think it eventually leads to the company really, really struggling and perhaps even folding or being bought out.
Yeah, is that real, isn't it?
Yeah, it's from this one incident.
It's crazy how things Vince has done a lot of genius things, as we touched upon, well, more than touched upon last week, but also he's been fortuitous in places as well.
Yeah, and he's always seemed to be a kind of that all in kind of guy, you could tell he threw everything at Austin. Once he realized that Austin was the next big thing, he threw everything at him. We've kind of covered the little run from the Montreal Screwjob all the way through the 98 Rumble, and then Austin winning the title at WrestleMania 14 on chain wrestling. And going back and seeing these incidents in singularity, and then following the timeline, it was clear that once Vince pinned his hopes on Shawn Michaels, and then there was a realization that maybe Shawn Michaels wasn't the guy to carry the company forward, he was scrambling for somebody to take up that mantle, and Austin was that guy. Now, if it wasn't for this promo, Austin wouldn't have been that guy. So we would have had Shawn Michaels essentially maybe the only one who could carry the company through. So
when he fancied it.
Yeah, and that's if we got to that point, because without Austin, we don't break out of that new generation style of booking. Without him pushing the reality of hating your boss and kind of letting us behind the fourth wall, knowing that this ring announcer and this commentator, Vince, was actually the owner of the company. Yeah, I don't think we get that huge storyline of Austin versus McMahon. So, it's a massive kind of butterfly effect.
It really is, and then that takes you even further. Obviously, The Rock's rise to prominence is as the corporate Rock with Vince McMahon fighting Austin.
Well, yeah, we've just got to The Rock on a changing attitude, and it's the Rocky Maivia Rock. And we're quickly getting to the point where they're chanting "Die Rocky, Die," so The Rock doesn't get the push.
No, then WWF genuinely screwed them. Mm-hmm. It's interesting to see how those careers diverge at that point. So Triple H doesn't win King of the Ring. Austin does. So you go almost a year later, WrestleMania 13. Austin's got one of the greatest matches ever against Bret Hitman Hart. Mm-hmm. Triple H is fighting Goldust. WrestleMania later, Austin is fighting Shawn Michaels with Mike Tyson as referee again. One of the most massive mainstream capturing matches WWF have ever done. Triple H was in a European title match against Owen Hart. So they, I mean, it's crazy how their careers diverged. Triple H's career was postponed for 2 years, essentially.
Yeah, he was a lackey for yeah. 2 years when he could have been on level par with Shawn Michaels. And Michaels at this time was face. Triple H was heel. So he could have been the neck and neck between him and Shawn Michaels. We may have never got DX.
That's where I'm coming to.
There we go.
Because, as you say, Austin started off the dive into kind of the profanity and the mature rated content, if you like. But it was D-Generation X that then kind of pushed that even further. And if Triple H wins King of the Ring and his career skyrockets off the back of that in a similar way to Austin's did, surely D-Generation X doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
Which just changes Triple H's entire career. His whole yep. career, which up until a few years ago was still going on, just completely changes. Yeah. And I don't think the podcast is long enough to say all the ways in which it would.
Well, yeah, I mean, the guy's multiple-time world champion. He's a Grand Slam winner. He's done everything that there is to do as a wrestler, married into the family. I mean, does that happen? Without this incident, there's enough kind of like wrinkles in the timeline where does he bring in China as part of his team? Because I know China was someone who he pushed to bring into the company as a bodyguard. If he's already in that upper echelon of being a champion and a world champion contender because of the King of the Ring win and because of the kind of escalated timeline with winning the Intercontinental title and then being pushed into the mainframe, does he feel that need to bring in China as a valet?
That doesn't happen because Triple H's entire this one, yeah, Triple H's entire career from kind of that point is he's not as good as the other guys, but he will claw and he'll fight and he'll cheat and he'll use his power to be the champion. But you know, he's not as good as Michaels. He's not as good as Undertaker. He's not as good as Austin. He's not as good as Rock. But he'll be champion by hook or by crook, and that's why China comes in. If he wins the King of the Ring and he climbs to become a world title contender through merit, he's a completely different character. And you're right about kind of does him and Stephanie come together, or does he rise to the same prominence within the company? Because a lot of the rumor is that because he took the punishment on behalf of the other three guys, and because he took it and he never complained about it, and he just worked harder to claw himself back up into Vince's kind of eyes. Actually, that's where Triple H earns the respect. He didn't have respect when he was in the clique because no. They were pricks.
Yeah.
But the locker room see, and particularly Undertaker apparently saw that actually this isn't fair. He's taking the rap for four guys here. And but he's just doing it, and he wants to work on and go past that. So I think, yeah, does something in that, does he keep his job because of that? Because when Nash and Hall have gone and X-Pac have gone, and Shawn Michaels is starting to get a bit flaky, does Vince just sack Triple H if he's reacted to that punishment in this scenario the punishment didn't happen because the curtain call didn't happen, so he'd probably just go on being a bit of a prick backstage. But as that power of the clique disappears, then he's just a prick with no friends, so Vince fires him. Never marry Stephanie.
Yeah, I mean that's certainly a scenario, but I think the way he took the punishment shows that deep down he has a lot of respect for the kind of the older rules of wrestling. So I think if he didn't have that kind of that power structure with the clique, if it was just him and Shawn, I think he starts to be more of a an elder statesman backstage, kind of like one of the locker room leaders. Especially if he wins the King of the Ring, then goes on to win more singles titles. I think he doesn't become the douchebag that was part of DX. He doesn't have that character. I think he sticks with the kind of snotty blue blood style character for a lot longer, because the whole kind of that DX character was built on the back of what Austin was doing. It was built on the back of, instead of we are playing a character, we are being ourselves, but we're just turning the dial all the way up, and we're kind of over-exaggerating our characteristics, I suppose. So I don't think that happens. I think he stays as kind of like Hunter Hearst Helmsley, the Greenwich, Connecticut blue blood who looks down upon people. And he plays the heel to Shawn Michaels, who was at that time the face. So let's look at Shawn Michaels. Obviously, he faced no punishment. Or you would suggest he faced no punishment. But you've also got to remember his title runs didn't actually last that long. It's not that long after this happens that he's dropping the title to Psycho Sid. So with the way that that Diesel and Razor left, does Psycho Sid get brought into the company? Because he essentially was replacing the big men that were leaving. That leads then to the storyline with Camp Cornette and Vader, and then the turn for Shawn Michaels on Psycho Sid, then an attempt at a double turn at Survivor Series 96, which then leads to Shawn Michaels dropping the title, getting it back later on in the year, and then really kind of starting that feud with Bret Hart about him kind of wanting essentially to be the man in wrestling and doing anything necessary to keep that spot, which ironically led to him getting injured and having to leave the company for 4 years and really kind of assessing his life goals. Do you think that the punishment laid onto Triple H and him, Michaels essentially getting away with it scot-free, do you think that situation would change? Do you think that Michaels would stay on the same trajectory, or do you think that there'd be kind of any alterations in what happens with him?
Yeah. So obviously the big thing with Michaels is obviously we get to WrestleMania 13, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And he refuses to drop the title to Bret Hart, which is obviously he says he's injured, but he's clearly not. And that then is obviously the catalyst for Montreal. Now,
I mean, even before that, though, if we get to SummerSlam 1996, he refused to drop the title to Vader.
Exactly. Now, I wonder if the non-punishment of Shawn Michaels after the curtain call gave Michaels the confidence to behave in that way through 96 and 97.
Mm-hmm.
He essentially, what Vince said to him was, if you've got that title, you're impervious to punishment. I can't punish you. Well, you can, Vince. You chose not to.
I mean, later in the timeline, he punished RVD when he was world champion.
What did he do? I don't know that one.
So he was smoking weed, and I think it was with Hacksaw Jim Duggan. They got pulled over by the police, and they were smoking the wacky tobacco. RVD just won the world title, and then he ended up dropping it essentially on a house show about 2 or 3 days later.
God. he obviously changed his mind. Shawn Michaels obviously changed his mind. But I think it's too much of a leap to say Montreal wouldn't happen. But I do think that Shawn Michaels evading punishment definitely
emboldened him.
It let Shawn know I can get away with it. I can get away with playing politics in Montreal. I can get away with it at WrestleMania. Obviously, if the curtain call doesn't happen, then that situation never happens, and maybe Shawn Michaels is a bit less political. But mm-hmm. Yes, that's a big leap. We know what he was like back then. Maybe wouldn't have made a difference.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey folks, PC Tony here. Thanks to our new partnership with Angry Lemonade, you can save 10% on physical products and digital commissions using the promo code CHAIRSHOT. Head to angrylemonade.net to check out their amazing catalog of products and services. Use the promo code CHAIRSHOT to save 10%. That's angrylemonade.net.
Are you looking for the newest and hottest in the world of pro wrestling? Then check out the amazing action on Powerslam.tv, the biggest indie pro wrestling channel in the world. Get over 6,000 hours of the best events from over 150 of your favorite promotions from 20 different countries around the globe. Brands like Progress Wrestling, Evolve Wrestling, Combat Zone, Defy, PCW Ultra, PWX, Over the Top, Shine, and hundreds of others with fresh content added every day for only $5.99 per month. Get your free trial today at powerslam.tv.
Go to powerslam.tv, promo code CHAIRSHOT, get your free month. Again, that's powerslam.tv, promo code CHAIRSHOT.
TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a Swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Yeah, so looking at the last two who were involved in that, obviously Nash and Hall, we already know that they were jumping ship to WCW. So in terms of punishment from the company, nothing really was there for Vince to be able to do. But I think there's an argument to be made that perhaps they saw one of their friends getting punished for something that they did, and that kind of gave them ammunition to essentially attack that company. If you remember when they came over and they were almost acting like invaders, acting like they were coming from the WWF to invade WCW. But once that kind of rolled into the NWO, it was literally just a war, and they were doing everything they could to kind of have digs at WWF. Do you think that if all of them escaped the punishment and the incident didn't happen, that they would have that kind of feeling where they wanted to attack the company that was punishing their friend?
I think there must be something in that, because why would Nash and Hall go to WCW and attack WWF like that, their former employers, because WWF never treated them badly.
Mm-hmm.
So it's unusual to jump to another company and attack. You see it now with AEW. You don't see Daniel Bryan attacking WWF. He's actually quite complimentary about them. Whereas with someone like CM Punk, who feels he's been wronged, he does attack. So yeah. I don't know of anything else in Nash and Hall's history in WWF that would have caused that. So it must be the unfairness that they treated Triple H with. But also, in the same way, I think Shawn Michaels is emboldened by no punishment. I think even though they switched company, Nash and Hall were, they probably felt even more untouchable that they got away with doing that. And are you telling me they didn't walk into WCW and Bischoff seeing these videos of, which made a fool of WWF at the time,
mm-hmm.
He didn't congratulate them on that, give them a big hug. That was amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, every time there was any kind of issue with WWF, Bischoff jumped on it. The Alundra Blaze leaving the company with the towel. He absolutely jumped on it. The stuff with the Montreal Screwjob and Rick Rude telling him what had gone on. He jumped on that storyline. The whole kind of Mankind will win the world title today. That'll put butts in seats. He jumped on any kind of error by WWF to where he thought he could gain an advantage. So I think him seeing this video, seeing the two of his new stars coming over, that was ammunition for Eric Bischoff to attack WWF.
Yeah, absolutely. So they walk in on a higher level straight away, because mm-hmm. they've already, before even walking into a WCW building, done something to hurt the opposition. So mm-hmm. so they're heroes immediately, and I think that clearly plays into their attitude when they arrive at WCW and all the things they got up to there.
Yep, I agree. It's interesting how many different kind of wrinkles and waves this one 20-second incident caused for the whole of the wrestling world.
It's mad, isn't it?
So
I've got someone else that you just mentioned. If we could just jump back to WWF,
go for it.
Mankind, Mick Foley. Now, Triple H doesn't win in 1996, the King of the Ring, but he does win in 1997. And I think that 1997 King of the Ring, so he's now got China, and it's China who screws Mankind out of the King of the Ring final. Mm-hmm. That really created the sympathetic character of Mankind.
Yep.
Up to that point, he was still kind of the psychopath, ripping his hair out, squealing, kind of a heel, kind of not really anything. But the Mankind that would go on and become so loved in fans' eyes because he was the massive underdog, I think that's created a King of the Ring 97 by Triple H.
Yeah, and Mankind goes on to be one of the biggest stars in the company, one of the most beloved stars in the company, multiple-time world champion. So that's a wrinkle I didn't even consider. It's the butterfly effect is just huge on this one tiny little incident.
It is, isn't it? And of course, Triple H and Mankind, Cactus Jack, Triple H and Mick Foley, their careers were linked for years and had some incredible matches. The Royal Rumble, was it Last Man Standing or Hell in a Cell?
It was a street fight, I think.
Street fight, yeah. I just don't see Mick Foley becoming as big without that loss to Hunter.
Yeah, and like I said, if Hunter had won the year previously, there was no reason for him to win that the 97 King Ring, because back then the King Ring was always like this is the next big star, or this is who the WWF are pinning their hopes on, kind of like a stepping stone. If Hunter had already won that King of the Ring, he had no reason to even be in the 97 King Ring. So, yeah, that's a really, exactly. really good point.
So I wonder who wins it. Shamrock. Well, 1997.
I don't think Shamrock... looking back on it, I don't think Shamrock was in it. I think Ahmed Johnson was in.
Potentially, he could have won it.
Gold Dust... who obviously was a huge star and a multiple-time RC champion. Savio Vega was in it, Jerry Lawler. So you'd be looking at Mankind or Ahmed Johnson. I don't think Ahmed Johnson really needed the rub. He was already a massive, massive star anyway. But Mankind was in this kind of like, this struggling position, I suppose, where... he'd had this huge storyline with Undertaker, and then nothing much, because he was a very one-dimensional character. Then he was essentially brought in to be a foil for Undertaker. So he needed this kind of, like you said, sympathetic edge to his character to kind of move him on from that. And if he didn't get that, he doesn't become the huge star that he that he ended up becoming, and the multi-time New York's bestseller author.
Exactly.
We don't get Foley's God as a book if it isn't for the
There you go. You mentioned Jerry Lawler there was in the tournament. I may have done him a disservice there because he actually did a lot for Mankind in that tournament as well to make him the sympathetic that he, I mean, he was fucking horrible on the mic to Mankind before that match. So
I think you didn't even need to say to Mankind, just ended it. He was fucking horrible on the mic.
He's horrible on the mic. So I do think King of the Ring 97 was a bit of the making of Mick Foley, and that's due to Lawler and Hunter.
Yep, I agree. So to kind of like round it off, how do you think that this affects kayfabe in general? I mean, like we said, this was almost seen as the death of kayfabe. Heels and faces never mixed. Do you think that kayfabe would be alive and kicking, or do you think this was delaying the inevitable that we were becoming smarter fans? We had more knowledge about these wrestlers as people, and we were kind of peeping behind the curtain more and more. Or do you think this is the crux of essentially where we are now, where kayfabe is not a thing?
Yeah, I don't think its effect on kayfabe is massive. I think it is the tipping point where everyone just kind of goes, let's forget about that now. But it was coming anyway. And the reason I don't think it had such an effect was if you just watched WWF TV, the curtain call never happened. It only happened, as you say, two people snuck video cameras in. God knows how big they were back in 96. There must have been rocket launchers. But they did sneak them in. But those videos only went on like fan forum websites and like were picked up by Meltzer and the likes of that. If you're on those sites or you're reading Wrestling Observer, then kayfabe already doesn't, you already know it doesn't, is, you know, you've already peeked behind the curtain. So I just don't think it did break kayfabe, and I don't think it was the reason kayfabe broke. The steroid trial had already happened as well, where Vince had already had to admit that it was orchestrated, in a court of law. And I think, as I said, I don't know if I said it last week or on a previous episode of Badlands, I think it really is just TV that breaks kayfabe. When wrestling becomes more of a TV show than a live event, and it's a glossy TV show, and I think the biggest thing is the action replays, then you just start to see it fall apart a bit anyway. So I think it was always coming. What do you think?
Yeah, I think you're right. We were always getting to an era where we had this information at our fingertips. The internet was a massively burgeoning thing, and when you are interested in wrestling, like I said, fan forums and bulletin boards were already a thing. I mean, back in those days, you were probably getting ready to start your e-fedding and stuff like that. So it was always a kayfabe was always going to go by the wayside. And then you get that the statement by Vince saying how he doesn't want to offend fans anymore, that wrestling is just like real life. It's not black and white. It's multiple shades of grey. He doesn't want to insult our intelligence. So it was always going to go by the wayside. I think that it was just kind of like the push over the edge, I suppose, where Vince knew that he essentially couldn't stop this kind of this run to kayfabe dying. And that he would have to eventually change the way he produced wrestling and TV, because people were not believing in the superhero characters anymore. They were more interested in the real people behind the wrestling characters. And I think that's why WCW was so hot, because it felt real. You felt like you knew these people as real people, where we still had on WWF, we still had Rikishi running around dressed up as the Sheik. We still had Dustin Rhodes dressed up as an androgynous sex doll. So the characters were always going to die off, and kayfabe was always going to die off. So I don't think it had much of an effect. I think it maybe just sped it up a little bit.
Yeah, I hear a brilliant quote. I don't know who to credit for it. I think this is the point where WWF ceases to be a wrestling company and becomes a TV show about a wrestling company.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know who said it, but I love that. I think it's actually true.
Maybe this is the point where Vince fell out of love with wrestling, because we always hear the rumors that Vince doesn't particularly like wrestling. It's just that's the business that he's in, and he is essentially wanted to be a money-making conglomerate that just works in the wrestling scene. And if he could do a wrestling show with zero wrestling on, he'd be a very happy chappy. So maybe this is what killed wrestling for him. He was a believer. He killed kayfabe for Vince in this moment.
That's it. Stephanie doesn't even call it wrestling. She calls it conflict resolution.
and that would not surprise me. It really, really wouldn't.
Whenever she does an interview, she does say it's about conflict resolution.
Jesus Christ. And that's the biggest company in the game, folks.
Yeah.
The World Conflict Resolution Entertainment.
And the man who took the punishment for the curtain call is like second in command, third in command.
So let's wrap this up with a neat little bow, I suppose, or as neat as we can. So if the curtain call didn't happen, we don't get Austin. Oh, we don't get Austin 316, should I say. He potentially doesn't become the huge star that he became. That kind of sets off a domino effect in WWF struggling against WCW and potentially leading to the company not being able to compete. In terms of Triple H, I'm paraphrasing, but I think we both agree that he still becomes a big star. It just happens a lot quicker, and maybe not in terms of him being another kind of anti-authority figure.
I think he becomes a bigger, more different star.
But then there's also the kind of roll-on effects of people like you said, like Mankind, who, like I said, I didn't even contemplate the effect it has on him. But we don't get that huge star, we don't get the huge star in The Rock. We don't get that kind of era of WWF where there were 6 to 8 people you could pin the title on at any one time and the company still look really legitimate. We don't have that kind of overabundance of top stars in the company.
No, don't get China.
No, we don't. And we have Shawn Michaels still being the massive dick that he was.
Yeah. He's probably in this reality, he's still doing it now.
Yeah.
Refusing to drop the title at 68 years of age or whatever he is.
He's wanting to break Bruno Sammartino's record for the longest ever reign. Well, I think that was a fun breakdown of a very kind of like microcosm event, and it was interesting. Like you said, how many kind of effects this one little incident had on the wrestling world. It's almost as big as the one we discussed last week, I think, with Vince buying the WWF. This tiny incident had so much knock-on effect with the rest of the wrestling world that it essentially changed, or it was a massive part of a change in outlook for the whole company.
Yeah, I think we've picked three era changing moments.
Mm-hmm. Now, are you going to be able to keep that run up with your next pick, sir?
Well, I've gone different. I've gone a bit different now. Stepping away from the business end a little bit, and maybe into the realms of, it's not quite fantasy booking, but it's realms of what would happen to the characters rather than the business. And it is, what if Brock Lesnar hadn't defeated the streak?
Oh, interesting. So that's, like you said, that's essentially a fantasy booking. You can either go down the Brock Lesnar route and see what happens with him, or we can work out what happens with Undertaker, what happens with the streak. Exactly. So yeah,
the rule though is that everything up to that point stays the same. You can't break the streak earlier.
Okay, so it was always
Undertaker beats Brock Lesnar, and then from there.
What? So he was always 21-0.
Yes.
Okay. And I was saying that match happens.
That match happens. Undertaker beats Brock Lesnar. And from the moment the ref counts three, what if?
Interesting. That's some nice. I mean, I didn't even kind of think about going down the fancy booking route. I was more like the kind of pivotal moments or little kind of like moments in wrestling history. What if they didn't happen? But yeah, I think that's a really interesting one. It'll be interesting to delve into that.
And it doesn't just have to be booking. I mean, Brock Lesnar is big business. What happens to the business if Brock Lesnar doesn't become the Brock he is now? You know, or maybe he still does. Who knows? We'll talk about it next week.
We certainly will. So. Tune in to Badlands next week for that. I think it's a really interesting topic. But that's pretty much all from us this week. Want to give another kind of like shout out to Ray. I unfortunately wasn't able to be here for this episode, but hopefully he'll be back firing on all cylinders for next week. I'd like to hear his takes on Brock and The Undertaker. But aside from that, Mr. Tollis, it's your favourite part of the week.
Love this part. Well, I don't love this part because I don't like saying goodbye to you.
Oh.
Bullshit.
Wow.
No. Thanks everyone for listening. I hope you really enjoyed that one. I had a lot of fun researching that one and just talking through it there over the past hour or so. Come and join us again next week. So easiest way to do that is to go to your favorite podcast provider and subscribe to Chairshot Radio. Every Thursday, Badlands will be dropping, and as you said, we'll be talking about what if Brock Lesnar hadn't beaten The Undertaker for the streak next week. You can follow us on Twitter. You can follow him at Podfather Mags over on there. And obviously, he's just got an abundance of amazing podcasts you can check out across numerous networks. I'm not going to plug them all, but if you follow him, you can find them. Fantastic stuff. I'm on Twitter at RainCounter, and our good friend Ray, he's at Ray Cash. That's Ray as in Mysterio and Cash with the dollar sign. Oh, it's Ray Cash. Sorry. It's Ray Cash.
Brilliant.
I got there. Head over to prowrestlingtees.com/thechairshot, where you can find loads of lovely t-shirt and merch. If you fancy something nice for Christmas, wear some Chairshot apparel. It always be appreciated. You can go over to thechairshot.com for all your hard-hitting pro wrestling news and opinion. And I think that's it. I think I've covered them all there. So unless Mag says otherwise, I'm going to ask you, please always use your head, take care of yourselves, and come back next week and talk to us again. We'll be right back.
TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.